now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. No, you ain't writing nothing. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interviews.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I'm getting no interview.
On 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker. So let me first apologize to the shirts and the ties for your makeup. Cause I make you ugly. As soon as it drops, we're on a rampage. Bubbles popping up before you know it. There's rubble and dust, cause we'll be pushing it up. Somebody say,
you better run. Yeah. I think it's another scrape up in here. Straight up. I think it's another scrape up in here.
Friday, day two of the FedEx St. Jude Championship underway. Jeffrey, do we have a sense of what's happening out there?
Jeff, Denny McCarthy off to a hot start. He is 3 under through his first 5 holes. He has taken the lead at 7 under total. He leads by a shot over Chris Kirk. 2 shots over Taylor Pendrith, Matthew Pavon, Hideki. He leads by 3 over Vic, Eric Van Rooyen, Harris English, Sam Burns.
Have you ever had a hole in one?
On a par 3 course.
Okay.
It's important. You have to
say that.
You have to distinguish.
You have to say that. Anyway, Chris Kirk, obviously, with a hole in one yesterday. So head on out today.
On 14. That's a real hole-in-one.
It is a real hole-in-one.
That's
no question. It's a real hole-in-one. He didn't hit it quite where he was aiming.
No, that's why he hit the hole-in-one.
That's why
he hit the hole-in-one. If
he was trying to stay a little left.
Yes, everyone was tripping. Everyone was just hitting the same spot.
And so that was exciting. And good day for scoring out there. 57 of the 70 par, even or better. And so anyway, championship golf, best in the world. Out there at Southwind again today.
Some of the best of the world.
And all weekend long. Don't be a negative Nelly. Jeffrey, before we get to anything else, big news of the day. You got a new dog.
Yep. Tell us about this. Obviously, Carly. We miss Carly. We miss Carly every day.
Carly did her job. Carly was a good dog. And how did you go about getting a new pup? And how did you pick this pup? And tell me about the pup.
So my wife follows the street dog rescue society. I don't know.
It's a rescue group.
Correct. It's a group. And so I was not actively seeking. And then about a week ago, she goes, look at this boy. They just found him in Somerville. And look at him. Isn't he handsome? That was Aaliyah's mistake, because the house is just too quiet. I don't hear the jingle of the collar.
But you were not emotionally ready to move on.
Absolutely not.
But she was looking.
Correct.
And then you saw this.
And I go, your mistake. And I immediately filled out the application. They called me last Friday. I put Jeff's name as a reference, along with my mother.
They didn't call me, by the way.
I do think this is where if you can kind of Google me to a little bit, like you can
figure out reasonable
correct.
Human being.
Yeah. Correct. So
where'd you go meet him?
He was being observed and trained by a former veteran that trains dogs up in Somerville, and he brought him to the house yesterday. And so
you met him for the first time yesterday when he came to the house.
Met him for the first time yesterday. We got some videos and pictures of him.
Can you imagine a circumstance under which, like, that's a very different, if you go to a rescue place and
right,
there's
that's
six,
how I got
five,
Carly.
7 dogs or
yeah,
whatever.
That's how I got Carly.
You picked it, that's one back in the corner there. That's like whatever. For them to bring the dog to your house, under what circumstances would you have said, just not the dog for me? Can you imagine having said that? Were you braced yourself to say, not the dog for me?
I was obviously not. My wife is under the illusion that this is a trial.
Oh, I see.
Correct.
It's a trial.
Correct.
So this is a trial. So you could still say.
No, it's not.
Not the dog for me.
No. But it is. I think on paper it's technically a trial, but it is obviously not a trial.
And he is. He's made himself at home. How old is he? What was his circumstances?
He was taken in off the street up in Somerville. So, and he's clearly a little underweight. He obviously has.
Aren't we all?
Heartworm.
Uh-huh.
We're doing the heartworm treatment, everything.
What is the heartworm treatment? Is it a pill?
It's a pill, and then after you finish the antibiotics, they do two injections.
I see.
But he had his first. He had his. Well, I say this.
How old is he? He's a shepherd.
We think he's three.
German shepherd of some type.
Correct. He is to a German shepherd as Carly was to a lab.
Meaning?
A shepherd-ish.
Ish. And
he had his first Chick-fil-A.
What's his name? Did he have his own name?
He had his own name, and he's trained, so we're sticking with Rocco. But I believe this was his first Chick-fil-A trip this morning.
Oh, really? What did he get?
He got, of course, the biscuits, and then he shared some chicken minis and the yogurt granola parfait because you know that's healthy.
How's he doing? How did he enjoy his Chick-fil-A visit?
His compliments to the chef.
That's great. And he slept on the bed, of course.
Of course, obviously.
So there you go. That's the big news of the day today on the radio show. Interesting show today. We have Jason Smith, as we do every Friday. Looking forward to talking about Jason about all manner of things. But then we have. Well, it'll be a crowded studio at 10 o'clock because the 1984 YMCA team in Memphis, basketball team, won the national championship, the 17 and under national championship. And they are having a reunion this year. They're having a reunion this year. And on that team, Sylvester Gray was on that team. Marvin Alexander was on that team. Ron Hurey was on that team. And three members of that team, Ron Hurey, who has passed, three members of that team are going to be joining us. Greg Lockhart, Jim Barton, and David Kaiser are all going to join us in studio at 10 o'clock. The interesting thing, of course, this comes in the wake of John Martin's column about how the best players all leave Memphis, right? And, of course, back in 1984, the best players did not all leave Memphis. The best players, you know, stayed in Memphis and won a national championship for Memphis. And I'll just be interested in their stories. Some obviously tremendous players on that team. Ron Hurey, McDonald's All-American, went to play at Arkansas. Really, Nolan Richardson's first big recruit at Arkansas. Opened the door for that,
yeah.
Todd Day and whatever. But like he in the end, when they went to the Final Four, I think at that point he was coming off the bench. He had a 1 year where he was suspended by Nolan, but he had his very successful career at Arkansas. Sylvester Gray and Marvin Alexander, they were both declared ineligible at Memphis for signing with an agent. How times have changed.
High school kids now have agents.
Ultimately, they were.
Seriously.
They were. They played at Memphis and then they signed with an agent and then they. High school kids have agents. And so you sort of look back at the Larry Finch era and wonder what would have been had those two been able to continue to careers. Sylvester Gray played 1 year with the Miami Heat. But you look at the names, the other names, I have the complete roster in front of me. Sylvester Gray from Bolton went on to play for Memphis and the Miami Heat. Marvin Alexander from Whitehaven went on to play at Memphis. Ron Hurey from Whitehaven, Arkansas. Daryl Faulkner from Hamilton played at South Alabama and Long Beach State. Roderick Watson, West Side, played at Wake Forest. Mark Griffin, Union City High School. So he was sort of the one who came from outside, a little bit outside this region. He played at Tennessee. Jim Barton, all-time leading scorer at Dartmouth. I think is still the second all-time leading scorer in the Ivy Leagues ever, to Bill Bradley. I think that's true. Greg Lockhart is going to be joining us. Jim Barton is going to be joining us. Greg Lockhart, East Mississippi State. Keith Campbell, Ridgeway, played for UALR. David Kaiser is going to be joining us, SBEC, and then played for Union. Tim Hunt from Mitchell, Armstrong State, and Roderick Jones from Bolton High School. It was an incredibly distinguished group. And in some ways, I'm the wrong one to interview them because I wasn't here. Like, I don't remember their high school careers, nor do I remember their college careers. I've read about them. I know the names. I've met some of them over the years. But, you know, if Lapidus was doing this interview, he knew them all, presumably, and he knew whatever. But I'll be interested in their stories.
He wouldn't even need notes.
George wouldn't even need notes. I'll be interested in their stories. Again, that was the 1984 National Championship 17-and-under AAU team. And we're going to have them in studio.
Jim is now the third leading scorer. Matt Morgan, who played at Cornell. He graduated in 19. He passed him.
Damn that Matt Morgan. I think Jim Barton shot, as a freshman at Dartmouth, 94% from the line, something like that, I recall reading.
94.2.
It's just nuts. He did not.
Well, he slacked off his last 3 years.
He did not miss free throws.
88% as a sophomore, 90.6 as a junior, only 87.3. He didn't finish strong.
Anyway, they will be joining us in the at straight up at 10 o'clock. So that should be fun. We do have NFL to talk about. We got all kinds of things to talk about. We got NFL television developments to talk about. We had a game last night to talk about, kind of. But I thought we'd begin with I think we need, Jeffrey, to have the official prediction. Lots of talk about the schedule. Obviously, about the Grizzlies' schedule, which was released yesterday at 2. We had Rob Fisher on, and straight up at 2 o'clock yesterday, he put out his notes, which I have retweeted. But I do think, I said early on, I think it's important for this team, and maybe it's not. Maybe it's just important for me spiritually that they get off to a good start, right? But I think for them to remind the league that they are an elite team. And then, honestly, whatever you think of the Taylor Jenkins stuff, I think it's kind of important for him to get off to a fast start, right? But for Ja and for all of them, right, it is important, I think, important to get off to a fast start.
I'm with you, because, in the sense of, is it going to dictate the whole season?
No,
we all acknowledge that. But at the same time, I'm with you.
If you are 8-12 after 20, you can still, finish third in the West and do everything you want to do. We know... Hell, the regular season is devalued. The first 20 games of the regular season does not determine anything, right?
Yes.
But maybe it's just for our psyches here on the show and broader Grizzlies fans, I think it would be nice to get off to a fast start. And given that, I thought the first 20 games looked totally manageable. And we're going to go do the, Jeffrey, you know we do this when we have a schedule right in front of us.
Yeah, let's get some wins and losses out there, boys.
Do the official Jeff Calkins show record after 20 games. Okay, you ready? We can dispute this. We'll put some in the disputed column. At Utah for the opener.
Win.
That's a W, 1-0. At Houston.
All right, I'm willing to say loss here.
Okay, fine. I think it's reasonable to say split those. 1-1. Home against Orlando.
Win.
2-1. Home against Chicago.
Win.
3-1. Home against Brooklyn.
Win.
4-1. Home against Milwaukee.
Loss.
Okay, I'm willing to do that with you too. 4-2. So then you got at Philadelphia.
Loss.
4-3. Then you got at Brooklyn.
Win.
5-3. Then you got the Lakers and Washington at home.
Win.
I think so, too. That's 7-3. So we're at 10 games. We're 7-3. Okay? Then you go on the road. At Portland.
Win.
That's a W. That's 8-3. At the Lakers.
Win.
Whoa, I'll go with you there. That's 9-3. At Golden State.
All right. I'm saying a split of those two.
Yeah, I think so, too.
They're going to go 1-1.
That's exactly right. So that's 9-4. Okay. Then you got two games against Denver at home.
Split.
I think they can split those, right? So then you got 10 and 5. Philadelphia at home. We'll give them a loss.
Yeah, I think Philly's a bad matchup.
10 and 6 at Chicago.
Win.
That's 11 and 6. Portland home.
Win.
12 and 6. Detroit home.
Win.
13 and 6. New Orleans at home.
Win.
14 and
that's
6.
That's a Black Friday game.
And that's a black, yeah, 14 and 6.
Most underrated
Indiana,
home game of the year.
And Indiana at home. We're already at 14 and 6 before Indiana.
15 and 6.
Yeah, but we were doing top 20, so I was getting ahead of myself. So after 20 games, we believe this team will be 14 and 6. That's a 700 clip.
And again, I see no lies.
Or fire Taylor Jenkins.
Yeah, I see no lies.
Now, do you think if you had done that same thing with literally just looking at Las Vegas odds, would you also gotten to 46, or was our irrational exuberance?
They wouldn't have been 14-6, but they would have been
right there,
12-8, something like that.
Yeah, I think that was good to see. In terms of the other stuff on the schedule, listen, it's more fun when they open at home than on the road. Do we agree with that? But whatever, you're going to get the home opener later, so they open at Utah.
The only problem I have with the home opener this year is it's a college football Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah, do we know what's happening on that college football Saturday?
So I believe Tennessee's off. Memphis plays Charlotte, and I presume that's going to be an early afternoon game. That smells like ESPN Plus at like 2:30. Ole Miss plays Oklahoma that day. Like, that's kind of the big game.
What time will Ole Miss Oklahoma be?
It's probably going to be a night game.
So that's the one. And Orlando, and it's an 8 p.m. game.
Correct. Memphis.
Eastern time. It's 7 p.m.
So 7 Central.
NBA.
The Grizzlies play Houston on Friday. Orlando hosts Brooklyn on Friday as well. We don't have the situation, because this is one thing Eric was curious about. Like, last year when the Grizzlies played the Wizards early, the Grizzlies had to play a back-to-back, and the Wizards hadn't played, like, in multiple days.
Right.
But both teams will be kind of on even footing.
You got the MLK game. You happy with the MLK game?
Thrilled. You know why? Did you see what time start time is?
Start time is 1:30.
Yeah.
Start time is 1:30. Oh, you're just thinking selfishly about your radio show. It's on TNT, Minnesota, obviously. And so it's certainly a good matchup, and it's on TNT, right?
Yep.
Like, whatever.
And it's on MLK Day.
And it's on MLK Day. So there you go. So we'll have Mike back in town. And beyond that, I've tweeted out the schedule. It is interesting. It ends up with three games against Minnesota, Denver, and Dallas, and you're like, oh, that could be some jockey in there at the end, or it could be totally meaningless.
Correct.
It could be that Minnesota, Denver, and Dallas are sitting their players for one reason or another, or tanking for one reason or another. 2 years ago, Dallas was tanking.
Absolutely.
At the end. Like, who the hell knows, depending on the injuries and whatever else. I don't mind having good teams in those late slots, Denver second game from the end, because if you need it, there's at least a very good chance that they'll be sitting.
Well, and Jeff, I mean, obviously it's ramping up for the playoffs too, so if you need a nice little report card.
So there you go. I do not, it's funny, after we got off the air, I always listen to Jason and John as I'm tearing out of the studio, and I was listening yesterday, and they were basically having a debate about whether this matters. Like, schedule release, why do we care? And John is basically of the view, 41 home, 41 away, who cares? That is not, like, and I am not a, big SEC schedule release TV show thing or whatever. Like, I don't need all the folder all around it. But the idea of seeing the schedule and how it unfolds, to me, is a very meaningful day, because this is how we're going to spend our next year. You know what I mean? It gives us literally the calendar for the year. The other things, whether it's Thanksgiving and Christmas, and like, we know the calendar for the year, right? We know when all these things are falling. Now, I think, oh, okay, this is the opener. This is like, this becomes And it's one of the things I always liked about Major League Baseball is that Major League Baseball, as compared to NFL, it's just with you all the time, right?
Yeah.
It's if you, like it's good company all the time. And the NBA is a lot like that. It feels like every night there's a game. If there's not, you just have one night and there's another game. And so there is a rhythm to it, and I like seeing how this will all unfold, and I like imagining how that might go and whatnot. This is going to be, I mean, let's be honest, we're a sports talk show. We're going to be talking about these games for the next, you know, however many months. So I kind of like it.
I lean with you. Here's the key difference. Like, yeah, I can understand the excitement of yesterday. It doesn't get real to me until I get my magnet schedule, my refrigerator schedule.
I have something really...
That's one of my favorite days of the year.
One of the things, when I bought this house, one of the things I really like about it is it's got a drinking fountain in the kitchen.
Indeed.
And I don't know any other house. And some of you have fancy houses. Some of you have 7,000-foot houses. Mm-hmm. Some of you have all kinds of, you know, the bells and whistles. You know, you got basically tubs that will do the scrubbing for you, mm-hmm. whatever else. None of you have a drinking fountain in your kitchen. None of you have a drinking fountain in your kitchen. I do. But my refrigerator?
It's not magnetic.
It's not magnetic.
Yeah, it's tough.
That's just...
Do you have the outside fridge?
It's irresponsible. So I have one fridge, and it's inside, and it's not magnetic.
You don't have the garage fridge?
I do actually have a fridge, but I don't even... Nothing's in it. I think it's not even plugged in. Like,
there's
an
same
old
setup
fridge. We don't use it.
In the house that I grew up in, same thing, where our kitchen fridge was not magnetic. But our Coke fridge outside was magnetic, and that's where our schedules went.
Okay, so you had somewhere to put these things. I'll never make that mistake again, I'll tell you that. By the way, Jarvis has weighed in on... I should have Jarvis do these interviews. Jarvis has weighed in on these... On the players on this 1984 YMCA team that won the AAU National Championship. Sylvester Gray was 6'8", 235 pounds of black granite. He could do anything on the court. After playing well early, hurt his hand badly during his rookie season with the Heat, hung around for a while, then went overseas. If you look at his basketball resume, it's about 20 different overseas teams.
By the way, black granite is such a cool way to describe someone. Why do we not do that more?
That's why I consider myself. And Jarvis also points out the 1:30 start for the MLK game kind of looks like a diss, but it's the presidential inauguration day around 10 p.m. And college football playoff is that night. At least it's on TNT. I did not object. That's a busy day.
Indeed.
That is a busy day. So there you go. One other story from yesterday I wanted to talk about. I want to get your opinion on this.
All right.
Did you see Matthew Perry's assistant and doctors were charged with getting him ketamine?
I did.
And you look at this and you think, okay, is this really what we want our law enforcement to be focused on? Like whatever, the personal assistant?
Immediate reaction.
The stories are just kind of sad. Honestly, sad. So his personal assistant, Kenneth Iwamasa, who'd been with him for 25 years. I found myself yesterday looking up Kenneth Iwamasa's LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And he's just like he does personal assistant to other people, too. That's what he is. He's been a lifetime personal assistant. Anyway, the 5 days leading up to his death injected him with 27 shots of ketamine. It just feels Elvis Presleyan, you know? It feels Princeian. It feels, well, you know what I mean? It feels...
My first thought was Michael Jackson.
It's like Michael Jackson. Exactly. And Michael Jackson is another one. You have these extraordinarily famous people who... I think it's pretty clear celebrity does not produce happiness, right? Who are just 27 shots of ketamine in the 5 days leading up to his death, including at least 3 on the day he died. Indictment says the defendants were 2 doctors, basically ketamine, you know, prescribers, right, who will give you what you want because you're famous or pay money, right?
I think it might be more the latter.
Right. Defendants use coded language to discuss drug deals, referring to bottles of ketamine as Dr. Pepper, cans, and bots. But this is what made me think, okay, F them, prosecute them.
All right.
This quote. And it said that when Dr. Placentia texted with another doctor about how much to charge Mr. Perry for ketamine, he wrote, "I wonder how much this moron will pay. Let's find out."
Yeah,
like,
I'm with you.
Just they're evil effers. Like, that's evil. I wonder how much this moron will pay. Let's find out. I mean, then the truth matters. Then I found myself. I looked up some photos of this personal assistant, and it pops up a photo of the personal assistant and Matthew Perry shopping in this year. And Matthew Perry looks like he weighs 280 pounds.
Yeah. I mean, let's also, like, not forget, like, didn't we have the Friends reunion, like, before? Like, he looked awful. He couldn't put a sentence together.
I confess I did not watch the...
My wife was watching, I walked in, I was like, oh, boy.
Just obviously an extraordinarily troubled guy. So, that struck me yesterday. And then the other story that struck me yesterday, there were a bunch, and we have a bunch of NFL we'll get to later on in the show, is did you see that Corky's is on QVC. Corky's was taping a show, a QVC.
I learned that QVC is still a thing yesterday, or whatever, when I was reading the early award.
My first question is this. Have you ever bought anything off of TV? Have you ever, like, bought anything, called the 800 number?
No.
Fired up your whatever
code? Have I gone
code?
Into the As Seen on TV store once or twice? Maybe.
You have gone on the As Seen in TV store?
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of amazing. So they have a foodie travel series, and they filmed a live episode from the Poplar Avenue location in honor of the restaurant's 40th anniversary. But the amount of ribs that they move on QVC, it just has never occurred to me when I see. And I will say, some of those things look delicious. If you stop on whatever, is it the only shopping network? Are there other ones that I'm watching, or is QVC the one that I'm watching? When I flip around,
There's Home Shopping Network.
That's a different one.
Yes, HSN. I think there's
maybe,
like,
that's the one I. Maybe that's the one I watch more than any others. But it says the restaurant has days where it will sell, get this, 120,000 to 140,000 racks of ribs in a single 24-hour period.
That's insane.
That's crazy. 140,000. How many racks? Do you get two racks of rib off a pig?
I think, right?
Wait, one each side, right? You would think, right? One rack each side, right?
Am I being stupid?
I got two sets of ribs. I just think
about the pig's body. Like, you have...
You would think two sets of ribs.
Right.
Unless for some reason you get two sets on each side, but I don't believe that.
Or do you split them in half?
So if you're getting 140,000 rack... Yeah, that's the thing. You could be... Maybe a rack is... But whatever. That's 70,000 pigs just for Corky's, just... In a day.
Thank you for your service.
They also, by the way, sell barbecue pizzas, tenderloins, specialty sauce flavors, and even a Cajun turducken, plus smoked hams and smoked turkeys. Sold more than 60,000 individual ham and turkeys in a single day. That goes in October. I like a Corky's. Well, you know what I like? Here's the thing. I like a wet rib. I make no bones. How about it? Huh? I like a wet rib, and I like a Corky's rib. People always talk about what Jennifer Biggs used to talk about was the catfish.
Yeah, I like the chicken drummies.
Corky's, the chicken drummies.
Yes, I like the chicken drummies. I don't love Corky's sauce.
Cork chicken drummies.
Yeah,
like little wing drummies.
Yeah, they're just basically wings,
but they don't sell the flats.
They have both.
They sell. They do both.
Whatever.
But you can get the drummies separately.
Correct. Yes, they have the chicken drummies. Or tamales are very good there. Jennifer,
are the drummies, what flavor are the drummies? Are they barbecue sauce?
I just get them fried.
And fried drummies. Yeah. And you put on whatever you want. They're just,
I like the spaghetti there. I don't love their sauce. That's the problem.
You don't love this.
Everything else is fine. I just don't like their sauce.
If you don't love their sauce, that's the ribs and that's the pork sandwich. All right, we got Jason Smith coming up next. And then we have this entertaining group from the 1984 YMCA AAU National Championship team. We're going to have three members of the team. We're going to try to do this. Two on the phone, one in studio. And then we got a lot of other things to talk about, including NFL news. Speaking of the NFL, you want to get your NFL future bets in, head on over to FanDuel. You know, I'm out on the Bills now. The Matt Milano injury, that is what really, like, I'm out on him. Maybe I'm emotionally protecting
myself. Because he was healthy last year, by the way?
No, but they had safeties last year. They had Leonard Floyd. Like,
right.
And compared to that defense last year, when
Matt got hurt, y'all were kicking ass.
They survived without Matt Milano last year. They did survive without Matt Milano last year. But this year, they also are missing their two starting safeties from last year. This year, they're also missing Leonard Floyd from last year. This year, they're also missing their starting center from last year. This year, they're also missing Stephon Diggs from last year. I see the Bills as at best a 9-win team this year. And so
you don't believe in Josh?
So I do believe in Josh, but I also believe in gap years. It
sounds like I'm hearing some hater tendencies.
No, I love Josh. And so I don't know what the Bills are. What's their win total? Do we have any idea what their win total is? Yeah, no, under. Hit that under. And right now, if you place one measly little $5 bet and win, you'll get $100 for your new customer. You get $150 in bonus bets. Bet on whatever futures you like. Listen, go ahead. Be my guest. Hit the over on the Bills on their win total, but
10.5.
No, that's an easy under. Hit the under. It's FanDuel. Go to FanDuel.com/Calkins, CALKINS, CALKINS. Must be 21 and older and present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable. Bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. Jason Smith coming up next. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Well, it's Friday, and pretty soon we'll be looking at football Fridays. So if you are getting yourself to a tailgate, whether it's in Oxford or whether it's in Starkville or whether it's on Tiger Lane or Knoxville or Fayetteville, get yourself to Oak Hall. At Oak Hall, they have polo shirts, the same lightweight performance shirts you've been wearing all summer, but they have them in NCAA-approved collegiate colors. So they don't have the logo, because let's be honest, like on a Tuesday at work or wherever, you don't necessarily want to be, you know. But they come in the official colors. So you can wear Tiger Blue. You can wear Tennessee Orange. You can wear Alabama Crimson. You can wear Arkansas. You can wear Ole Miss. They have these beautiful, comfortable, lightweight performance sports shirts, polo shirts, in the exact same NCAA-approved collegiate colors. This is something you can wear next Tuesday, next Friday, and you can wear it at the tailgate as well. Now available at Oak Hall. It is football season pretty close in the Mid-South, and it is football season at Oak Hall. Get yourself in there today and see what I'm talking about. All right, joined now by Jason Smith. Jason Smith from Jason and John every single day from 11 to 2. And I just saw that you're going to have Brooks Monaghan on the show. He, of course, won his 300th game as the coach of the Memphis Women Tigers last night, got a Gatorade bath afterwards. I was reading about it in the Daily Memphian, and you're going to have him on your show. That story, the story of women's soccer and the story of Brooks Monaghan, a Memphis kid who stayed and built something out of dust, is remarkable, isn't it?
It is. Especially, I mean, and you're talking about only, I think the number I read in the press release was 17, only 17 other Division I coaches, women's soccer coaches, have won 300 games at the same school. And so you're talking about a group of less than 20. I mean, it's history. He's a Memphian. He's done it here. He's continued to stay here despite offers to leave, just because a lot of it, the pride, the roots, he's talked to us about it. He's talked to you about it. He's as good a Memphis story as there is. They're coming off back-to-back Sweet 16s and get off to a 1-0 start last night, and, win number 300 for his career. So It's always nice when we can have Brooks on. I'm eager, Jeff. I'll be honest with you. Remember last year when we were talking about a program that could make, you know, runs like this in the Sweet 16? You know, very, you know, not a lot of means over there. And he had even discussed with you in that column. I remember it sticking out.
He literally said it was the worst locker room in the country. And I think it probably is.
In the country. And so I want to know. I want to know with the success. I want to know with the FedEx NIL deal, which we know the majority of which is earmarked for football, but we had hoped would at least trickle down to a program as deserving as Memphis women's soccer. I want to know, has this momentum, you know, in terms of what they've done on the field, has it helped in terms of behind the scenes? Is he getting what he needs? Clearly, he can do it with less than anybody else has got in the country. But is he getting the sort of help and support that program absolutely deserves, the program that he built deserves? So, yeah, we're eager to talk to him. And, Jeff, I'm eager to ask him, is there any progress on getting you guys some suitable locker rooms in there?
Well, I will tell you that I suspect there is momentum on that front, and I suspect he'll be vague about it. But there is momentum on that front.
So, I remember he got in a little bit of trouble when he told you that, didn't he? Or at least it certainly caused ripples, but I'm glad he spoke out with you last year. Didn't I say trouble? He didn't get into trouble.
No, there's been, guys, I think there's a real commitment over there now to getting the stuff
right. And it's, I mean, if you don't talk about it, you know, Lord knows you know this. I mean, if you don't say something about it, they'll keep giving you the squeaky wheel gets
squeaky
you,
wheel,
whatever
the grease. That's a good the grease. There you go. You're old school. It is kind of the other thing is it's sort of unlikely that, I mean, you can understand Memphis basketball. You know, this is an urban institution. It's, you know, we're a little gritty, a little, you know, rough around. The idea that they're building a women's soccer power is, I think, even makes it even more unlikely. And fun, really. You know, it's also part of what we've seen. We just saw it in the Olympics, all the women athletes, I think, what, they won 60% of the medals for the U.S. or something like that? Mm-hmm. All the women athletes who are doing such a... And now you see, like, just driving in, I was listening to Chris Canty, and he always does a bet. Like, he always does, you know, something to bet on tonight. And both last night and this weekend, the things that he was identifying was WNBA games. 5 years ago, you just would not have had that. They weren't on the radar. It is also part and parcel of this general long-awaited trend in celebrating women athletics.
Yeah, and remember the story a couple of years ago, too, from the women's NCAA tournament and how much that opened our eyes. Right. Remember, in terms of the weight rooms and the difference,
the disparity
between what they had given. Yeah, and I think sort of that being presented to us, the disparity here over the last couple of years with a couple of pretty gross examples, that one included, has also helped open eyes, but also helped add to the momentum. And then, yes, you get this crazy rookie class in the WNBA that, you know, so much of it's Caitlin, but obviously it's that rivalry, too, that she's got with Angel Reese. It just feels like women's sports is on the move, and a lot of places they're holding us up, including in USA Soccer, obviously.
So I'm going to have the pleasure at 10 o'clock. Chris Harrington's in Scotland, and so my 10 o'clock slot is open this week. But the 1984 Memphis 17 and under, the YMCA team that won the 17 and under AAU National Championship, they're having a reunion this weekend. And so I'm going to have three members of that team, I believe, if we can pull it off, we'll see, in the studio at 10 o'clock. Were they before, like, so this was the headliners of that team, Sylvester Gray, Marvin Alexander, Ron Hury, among others. Jim Barton went on to be the leading scorer at Dartmouth. Greg Lockhart had a distinguished career at Mississippi State. Like, it was a hell of a team, honestly. And was this all before your time? Do you have any recollection of these guys, Sylvester Gray?
Well, I mean, that was happening as we had in our first couple of years, having moved to Memphis from Fort Pierce, Florida, my dad getting the job with Jarvis and Jack and those guys over at Channel 5. And so that was happening in my baby years, you know, 9, 10 years old. But what I remember as I went through those years was the legend of Ron Hury, and you touched on it. Ron Hury was really Todd Day before Todd Day. I mean, he kind of opened the gates up there in terms of the Memphis guy going to Arkansas, but in terms of the way he played, I mean, the guy, he could do it all. And so this, obviously them with YOMCA at that point, no, I'm not tuned in, but what they became, what some of those guys became. I mean, the legend of, you know, of Gray, I mean, my dad was covering that for Channel 5 over there again with Jarvis and those guys. You know, that was very controversial because it's what you touched on. It's what could have been if you had Gray and Alexander, right, over at Memphis. And, you know, with this agent thing that went down, you know, everybody in town, it was such a letdown that the fact that you weren't going to have those guys with Larry over there at Memphis. And so, I remember that. I remember how let down the city was. And sort of, you know, what became of those guys college-wise. But that's kind of where I glocked in. It was all sort of happening already when we got here. And what we had to learn was, man, what this area produced then. And you're right, John touched on it and sort of how we've gone away from that, how it's changed so much. Back, you know, John's story more about it was concentrated here, but I'm talking about the level of talent. Back then, we learned as a family very early on that high school sports and the prospects coming out of here, many of them, you know, going to Memphis and feeding that program, but it was like the city's blood. It's what the city sort of, how the blood pumped around here. And so I learned that very quickly. And those were some of the first names, Jeff, that I had to learn. Okay, these guys are the Hoopers in town. Where are they go? They're going to Memphis State. Oh, Ron Heary's going to Arkansas, and that's one of the things. Again, Ron Heary, you know, again me telling you about my love for those Memphis guys that ended up going over there. He was really one of the for Arlen Bowers, I think Southside, another one of those guys. And then you get the, you know, Todd Days, Corey Becks, Dwight Stewart's. But it started a real trend that a lot of Memphians couldn't stand. But Nolan Richardson, you know, Nolan capitalized off of it. Mike Anderson.
I'm just looking at the roster of that team. Sylvester Gray, Marvin Alexander, Ron Heary, Daryl Faulkner, who went on to play South Alabama, Long Beach State, Roderick Watson, who played at Wake Forest, Mark Griffin, who played at Tennessee, Jim Barton, who's in studio here, played at Dartmouth.
Crazy. Ones.
Greg Lockhart at Mississippi State. Greg Lockhart was, he'd play against that Shaq team and win at Mississippi State. I know they got a couple teams at Mississippi State that wins over that team. Keith Campbell at UALR, David Kaiser, who's in studio here at Union, Tim Hunt and Armstrong Strait, and Roderick Jones played at Bolton High School. Do you think it was better then, or do you think they stuck around then? Or, like, right now, is the level as good? It's just not as concentrated?
No, it's not as good. And I would defer to, you know, Norton Heard the fourth, and I'm not going to say he sees every prospect in town, but Lord knows he's been in just about every gym. And more importantly, he knows guys like Chuck Lawson who have covered the middle school and see the future stars in high school and everything else. And he's covered it for years. The ones that have been around, I think, would tell you it's not what it was then. Now, the reasons for that and all that, we got into it with Heard this week. He pointed out that we're not producing the sort of, you know, 6'8", 6'9", or above big man that we used to seem to produce either. What we've got a lot of here lately and what we continue to have now we're not even producing the Sean Williams, Thaddeus Young types are on the wing that are, you know, big 6'8", 6'9", 6'7", whatever. It's more of the 6 foot, 6'3" guard. So why has that happened? That's a part of it. Like that crew you've got your big guys in there. We're not producing very many big guys anymore. I mean, is that, why have they gone the, you know, why has it gone that way? Is a question. But, no, it's in terms of Division I talent, we're not pumping it out in the same way we are. Again, you get into the whys. It's not a fault of coaching or anything else. I just think, you know, right now it's down. Will it come back? Perhaps. Thaddeus talked about wanting to sort of get it concentrated and keep it here and keep guys from leaving. But whether they're leaving or not, I just don't think the number of Division I athletes that this area used to produce is as high. And I'm sure there's a multitude. Again, we could go on and on about why that is. But and we're not producing, again, that big man anymore. That's a part of it as well. I'm interested, Jeff, real quick. Who was the coach of those squads? Was it, you know, that's what I'm, who had all that talent?
I'm going to have to ask. We got some in studio here now, but they're going to join me in the next segment. Who was the
Bobby
coach?
Or Frank Harris or
Rusty Cavataio. Rusty Cavataio was the coach.
Okay. Another name from the past that I heard back in, you know, another one of those legendary names. But you'd heard so many affiliated with the War Eagles over the years. But this is the YOMCA team, you're saying?
He was the coach. 84. He was also the coach at Catholic High School, evidently. Long lamented Catholic High School. All right, before I let you go, Jason, thoughts on the Grizzlies schedule? It came out just after your show.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I touched on with Jeffrey yesterday. It's really the how the NBA is saying, listen, you got to show us again. You know, what do you expect? You know, you won 27 games last year. We know what you guys are set up to do, but we want to see it. And so when you go from, what was it, 18 nationally televised games, Rob was pointing it out yesterday, to 9 this year, went 13 last year, you've seen it. And frankly, I would say there's no need in getting defensive about this. There's no need in acting like the NBA's forgotten about you. The NBA has moved on without you. And so, rather than that, I would just say maybe it's an opportunity in terms of fewer national televised games. That means fewer nationally televised interviews with Ja and everything else. My point being, maybe you can fly under the radar a little more. Go out and earn it as opposed to saying that you have, and that helps you get back into the, man, we got a lot to prove mode. It helps remind you of that. And if you want to use it as motivation, which I'm sure they will, hey, we're being slighted here, you go right ahead. But the point is the NBA is telling you, man, to get back on this stage, you're going to have to do it. We're not going to give it to you.
I confess, I'm not the slightest bit offended. In addition to, like...
There, I heard some of that, though. Yeah, I heard Rob mention it. I love Rob and his...
No, I've heard others,
But he said the forgotten team or something along those lines.
It is true.
No, it's not forgotten. It's that you won 27 games last year. It's that you got to come back and earn it. And so, you go back to when it, being the number 2 seed in the West, you'll be on national television the next year more. I mean, that's just the way it works in the NBA. And so, I'm with you. I don't think there's any reason to be offended here. Go back out and earn it. And frankly, that's the position that the Grizzlies, it's what they've earned. And we all understand it. And I think it's fair.
Yeah, the other thing that happened, by the way, while the Grizzlies were injured and accomplishing not much of anything last year, you had other teams emerge. So all of a sudden, like, you're going to put Anthony Edwards on. You're going to give him national TV. People want to watch him. You're going to see Oklahoma City, which everyone thinks is going to be the power in the West. You're going to want to see them on national TV. It's not just that you did, were injured and accomplishing nothing. Everyone else moved on, too. I had no problems with it, and I do like the fact that I think the early schedule is soft, and I know the games at the end count as much as the games at the beginning, but maybe it's just my psyche that needs the Grizzlies to get off to a good start, and that looks eminently doable given the first 20 that they have.
No, I'm with you. I think belief's an important thing. Once Ja's out there, we know that the level of that's going to go way up, and hopefully he's going to be out there the entire time. But my point is, you said it. I was listening to a little bit of that soft early schedule on your show, running through it, and there's an opportunity there to build that belief, to not get off to a slow start. And so we know this team. I don't want to, you don't want to get overconfident. I think there's been too much of that over the last few years. But the idea that you can get off to a fast start and sort of prove to yourself that, hey, yes, we're back, I think that could be a good thing for this team. Hopefully not something where, again, they're saying, look at us after this hot, whatever it is, 12-2 start. We're a contender. We're not scared of anybody. Put us in the finals. That's not what you want, not the mindset. But, whether it's Bane or a more mature Ja, hopefully, I think these guys have whether it's Bane sort of being that guy that's always been reserved and trying to pull them back, I just think you've got a more mature group that's been through something now, and those are the teams typically that take a step up. This one should.
It is funny. I got the whole community chiming in here. Jarvis is pointing out that Rusty, the coach, was his backfield teammate at CBHS. So small world. We're going to take a break. Jason, I'll be listening at 11. Thanks very much.
Appreciate you, man.
Yep. Okay, when we come back, I've got Jim Barton and David Kaiser in studio. Greg Lockhart, we're going to try to get him to join us by phone, and we're going to talk to the some members of this 1984 National Championship AAU team, how times have changed in Memphis. Get their reflections on the way it was, the way it is. We'll do that next. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Plus 24/7 customer support. His venue never misses a beat. Call quickgranger.com or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, welcome to Staples.
Yeah, my daughter needs a laptop for college, but I need to watch the budget.
Well, Staples hot deals on tech are backed by a price match guarantee, so our prices won't be beat.
Great. I can't believe my baby's starting college.
She'll do great.
I know.
Oh, let's get you a great deal on a laptop.
Save big on tech for school at Staples. Now get up to $300 off select PCs. And save 24 price match guarantee valid within 14 days of purchase. Exclusions apply. For details, visit staples.com/price match.
All 650 acquisition fee, $20,000 per year, 20 cents excess mileage, Forte RE794066, MSRP 21820. Telluride RG543666, MSRP 39835, EV9 R602, 29603, MSRP 61035. Lease terms include all rebates and incentives and a PF695. Includes tax, title, license, registration, and fees. Must finance through Hyundai with approved credit valid through 83124 dealer stock only.
Hey, yo, Jeff Allen, what's up over there at Gossett Kia South Mount Moriah?
I know what's down, Randy. Prices at Gossett Kia Mount Moriah. You looking to save? 41 MPG highway in a 2024 Kia Forte LXS, $199 a month, $37.99 due at signing. I've got a 2024 Kia Telluride S front wheel drive, $379 per month, $39.99 due at signing. And Randy, talk about saving big bucks. 304 EPA estimate range for $389 a month in a 2024 Kia EV9 Lite, $49.99 due at signing, all 24 month lease.
Plus the 10 year 100,000 mile powertrain limited warranty.
So whether you live in Horn Lake, South Haven, Olive Branch, or Memphis, you'll be happy, happy at Gossett Kia on Mount Moriah.
The Wing Guru, serving up 21 flavors of lip-smacking goodness. Whole wings, party wings, boneless wings, and more. Served just the way you like them and smothered in our award-winning sauces. Order online and pick up in the stores or stop in and stay a while. The Wing Guru.
Memphis' number one place for sports. This is WMFS-FM and HD1 Bartlett. WMFS Memphis, flagship home of the Memphis Grizzlies. 92.9 FM, ESPN, and Odyssey Sports Station. Jeff's guests appear on the Frame Corner phone lines. Frame Corner, with expert custom and do-it-yourself framing since 1975 on Park Avenue in East Memphis. Now, back to the Jeff Calkins Show, live from the Genesis Memphis Covington Pike Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
The Jeff Calkins Show. We've got a bit of a three-ring circus here because the 1984 Memphis YMCA 1700 National Championship team, so that was 40 years ago if my math is correct, they are having a reunion. And the names on that team were something else, including Sylvester Gray, Marvin Alexander, Ron Hurey, Roderick Watson, players who went on to play for all kinds of places, played at Arkansas, played at Memphis, played at Wake Forest, etc. In studio, I have David Kaiser, and I have Jim Barton, and then on the phone, we have Greg Lockhart, if it works. Let me just ask, I'll start with you, David. Welcome. How did this team, which won the national championship, I gather, right, that White Station High School is where it was held. How did this team come together in 1984?
Well, at the time, there were not near the number of AU programs in the city. So basically, you were either with the Memphis War Eagles that did a lot of the younger teams or the Memphis Y. Now, Idle Wild Presbyterian had a program later on. So the talent was really consolidated, and most of us with the team that won in 1984 were together as eighth graders with the Memphis Y. It all just came together. You know, the top players in the city wanted to play AAU ball and play in the spring and summer. And so we came together as eighth graders. And the next year is ninth graders. So we lost in the national semifinal game, a heartbreaking loss. We had a one-point lead and the ball with a few seconds to go. We threw the ball inbounds.
What's funny is, by the way, you can remember this like it's literally, yes. As you say it, you're
the defeats, the tough losses you do not forget. But that's how it came together at the beginning, and then we added players along the way.
Jim, so you were part of this all along. And by the way, this was public, private, it was black, it was white. What was it like? I mean, you ended up going to MUS and Dartmouth. What was that experience, this team, like from a sort of, you know, representing all of Memphis perspective? And what was it like for you experiencing that?
You know, first I was a late bloomer, so I was not on the eighth grade version. I was on the 15 and under version a couple years later. But it was all about the city, all about playing together. We were always playing against each other. So it was wide open, whether it was in rec or competitively. In fact, Greg and I were in the same region. at the time, Greg Lockhart, Greg, and he played at East High School. So it was a very blended community, and we all knew each other. Right. But we had classic high school tryouts for this team. It was not like a recruited, right. It's nothing like the world today where you got NIL, you got things, right. You know, AAU. It was literally, 30 of us came together, and we tried out.
Where was it? Where was the tryouts?
It was on
Shady Grove Presbyterian Church at the corner of Yates and Shady Grove.
Doesn't have a gym anymore,
And you had one day of tryouts, or 3 days or something, 2 days of tryouts?
2 days of tryouts, and that was it.
Greg, if you're there on the phone, appreciate you joining us. Do you remember those tryouts, and do you remember Jim Barton's game over at in the same region?
Oh, yeah. I know Jim quite well. Like Jim said, we played against each other quite a bit. But what I want to say, you know, a lot of guys, it was so much talent in Memphis during that time. You know, a lot of the teams had, you know, one or two, maybe three great players on it. And like Jim said, you know, we all came together and, you know, we put our egos aside and, you know, we made it happen. We took this team with the talent and we just learned to all play together. One thing I can say, we all had a team concept in mind. So it wasn't like you looked at like, okay, this guy was leading scorer in the city or this guy was scoring. We just came together as a team and, man, we had an awesome team. I think we had one of the very best teams I put up against any city, any state, that we had a great team.
Greg, when you think about your basketball career, and you went on to play, obviously, at Mississippi State, I was just reading some stuff about your career. You guys beat the heck out of LSU and Shaq a couple times while you were there. Where does this, like, as you remember, where does this time playing as a kid, really, and winning this national championship, does this rank up there? Like, do you remember it as clear as if it happened yesterday? How do you think about this period of your life?
I got started very early at a very young age playing, and it was due to really playing against guys that were better than I was, and I just had a dream of playing, and one my idol was really like Julius Erving. That's really what
Dr. J
started playing.
Uh-huh.
And I started playing, and as I was getting older and continuing to enhance my skills, my game, then I started meeting other players that were good, like Jim, David, Marvin Alexander, Sylvester Gray, all these guys. And, you know, we just all became friends. But comparing what I've done now and to what's happening today, I just think we were more locked in on fundamentals. We wasn't doing all that fancy crossovers and all of that. We were just basic fundamentals, and that's what I was taught to do.
All right. I'll ask you, who was the best player on the team, David?
Wow, that's a tough question.
Tough. People talk about Sylvester Gray.
Sylvester Gray was just a freak athlete, 6'6", 235. He was our starting center, could just jump out of the gym. And, you know, on top of that, he led the county in receiving as a wide receiver, an incredible pitcher on the baseball team. And, you know, Jeff, legend has it that the spring of his senior year, there was a track meet going on at Bolton High School, and he was not on the track team. He was in the gym playing pickup basketball. Well, the guy that's supposed to run 100 meters didn't show up. They came in and said, Sylvester, can you run it? He had high-top basketball shoes on, went out, won the 100-meter, ended up staying on the team, and won the 100-meter at the state level that same year. So just a freak athlete. Roderick Watson led the state in scoring 3 straight years, sophomore, junior, and senior year.
He played at Westside.
Right, yes. At Westside. They beat Sylvester's Bolton team in the state finals his senior year, which was incredible. But, Roderick got the MVP of the tournament that year, but it really could have gone to Ron Hurey or Sylvester. Or, you know, Jim was coming off an injury and had a fantastic tournament. It could have gone to any of literally 6 or 7 guys.
Jim, what do you remember about some of the gifts of the players you played with?
So, incredibly competitive. I think Greg hit the nail on the head. It was a very team-oriented, fundamental team. Rusty and Jimmy did a great job of you know, making sure that our egos were aside. And this is almost more like a family reunion than it is a group of basketball guys getting back together. It's been a long time. We're looking forward to it. A lot of us haven't seen each other in that span. But, you know, one of the things that was interesting, I was looking back at some of the stats, I don't think one player scored more than 20 points in a game.
Really?
It was five, six, seven guys scoring between 10 and 16, 18 points. So it was
incredibly balanced. Yeah.
And no three-pointer.
Greg, who impressed you? Who of your teammates? Tell me about Ron Hurey as a player. He obviously went on.
Oh, man.
He was a McDonald's All-American, early recruit for Nolan at Arkansas, and I think he went to a Final Four there, coming off the bench at Arkansas. What was he like as a player?
Oh, man. You know, you're talking about Ron Hurey. I mean, this guy was incredible in junior high school. He was doing things that ordinary people during that time wasn't doing. I mean, the guy had unbelievable talent. He was 6'6". He could play 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. He could pass, run, shoot. I mean, his skills were just unreal. And I watched him grow over the period of time. And when he went to Arkansas, I mean, he flourished at Arkansas. And I always told Ron, I said, man, you got the kind of talent that could take you to the next level. All you got to do is stay focused. And for us, the team, I mean, we had so much talent on the team to just say who was better than us, who was great. I think right. Everybody on that team was great because everybody was leading scorers of their team. Everybody played well. So, you know, even myself, but to just pick just a true.
You can't. Can't do it. How did you end up going to Mississippi State? We lost Greg. See if you can get Greg back. Oh, there you are. You're back. How did you end up going to Mississippi State, Greg?
Well, I'm curious from behind that. They recruited me, but I was recruited, highly recruited by a lot of different schools. I basically could have went anywhere I wanted to.
Uh-huh.
But Mississippi State really showed a lot of interest, and I took a visit. I liked what I saw. There was an opportunity for me to play in the SEC, which I've always wanted to play in the SEC. And at the time, Bob Boyd was the head coach, and they would compare me to Gus. William, who he coached, and a couple other players. And, you know, it wasn't far from home. Then I looked at it where, you know, my mom could get a chance to come down and see me play, and as well as friends or whoever wanted to come see me play. And being at Mississippi State, you know, it was a great adventure for me. My freshman year, I made freshman All-America. I could have, you know, basically could have came out then and did, but I was more focused on trying to get my education. I really wanted to get my degree, and then, you know, whatever came after that, that was that. But again, you know, I graduated from Mississippi State, played for all 4 years, started off 4 years, and played professionally for about 11 years internationally.
Unbelievable. So, David, you've been involved in youth basketball ever since, really, with the Memphis War Eagles and now over at ECS.
Yes.
When you see how it was then and you see how it was now, do you lament the way it's changed, or how would you even begin to characterize it? We had the piece earlier in the Daily Memphian that John Martin wrote about how now if you're a junior or senior growing up in Memphis and you're terrifically talented, you leave to go to some power outside of Memphis. And I don't know we'll ever see this collection of talent that I see in front of me here. You know?
Yeah. Great question, Jeff. And you're right. It has gone down. Every era wants to think there was the best. But Memphis high school basketball in the 80s and even 90s was really special. And, you know, I think back, coaches stayed at high schools for a long time. There was great continuity there. Jim's coach at MUS, Jerry Peters. They're almost 50 years.
That's incredible.
Greg's coach at East High, Robert Manning, there for years. Lloyd Williams at Hamilton. Marion Brewer, Northside. These guys stayed. They were pillars of the community, and they stayed, and they built up the program. And then you had more of a – there wasn't open enrollment, so guys were staying in their neighborhood, what have you. There's a lot of neighborhood pride. I mean, in the 80s, if you wanted to – go to a Melrose game or a East High game, you better get there about noon if you want a seat. There was tremendous pride in the neighborhood for those programs, and that was Hamilton, Melrose, all those schools. So you've got a lot of that. But, yeah, it's different now. These kids are and certainly it's great opportunities to go prep school, but there's a lot to be said to stay with your friends you've been playing with for years and learn how to be a great teammate and – what have you, and it's sad that it's changing.
I don't know if, Jim, you have observed. I know you've been involved in not just your distinguished career at Dartmouth, but since then you've been involved in the program at Dartmouth. So you see it from that perspective. That's a little different perspective, but what do you see?
It's just more complicated now. The AAU structure, people being recruited, they're bouncing around. It's less about high school,
right?
And it's way more about what program they play in. So that's a big differentiator. You know, as David said, there's just not the concentration like we had then. In fact, I was just looking at, I happened to find something from 1985-86. And we had 40 players when David and I were freshmen. We had 40 players playing Division I basketball from Memphis, and I've got a list. And
you
could, and that doesn't include Division III. Division III is another 20 something that were listed on this program. So there was a deep concentration, and it was interesting to watch the recruiting process, because everything at that time was to get recruited outside of Memphis. And Greg can echo this, I'm sure, David too. The first question an outside coach, a Dartmouth coach, or anybody else, is Memphis recruiting him?
Really?
Memphis recruited. Because
if Memphis recruited him, you're done. Yeah, that's it. I'll leave you alone.
Or it was the gold standard. If they're recruiting him,
they're good.
And I think I got a shot, I don't have to do a credibility check on the quality of the player.
Right.
So, you know, that's different. And now you got recruiting services. You had recruiting services. You had Blue Ribbon. You had, you know, a lot of those camps, the five-star camps. The camps were the bigger thing then.
Right.
If you got asked to go to the camp in Kentucky, I'm spacing
there's
on.
There's one in Pittsburgh. There's one.
Five-star and all those camps. Those were the AAUs. That's where the coaches went. Howard Garfinkel led a camp for 100 years, and that's where the players went. If you got invited to that, or you got invited to the ABC camp, or you got invited to those camps, those were the showcases, not the Adidas, Nike, whatever the tour is.
Yeah. Greg, it's interesting. So I don't know what you recall of those camps, but did people ask you that question? Is Memphis recruiting you? Is that a question that you recall being asked?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. The thing, you know, I probably would have went to Memphis, but Memphis felt like the people here, the talent here, would stay here. They could come in and recruit you, you know, late, where you had other schools would come in early that show interest, and, you know, Memphis just kind of sit back and say, well, you know, they from Memphis, you know, we're pretty sure we got a better shot to get them. And, you know, and that wasn't really true. And like what Jim said, the talent of the 80s and 90s were great, but my thing was, looking at today, a lot of these kids are talented, but you got to look at their fundamental skills. The coaches back then really honed in on your fundamental skill, because they wanted you to be the very best that they could get out of you. Because when you left high school, going to whatever college you choose to go to, you was representing not only yourself, but you was a product of them as well. And, you know, that's the thing I see different. You know, like I said, three-point line wasn't even that what we were playing.
I gather that Roderick Watson would have done pretty well with a three-point line.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. Jim, Roderick, I mean, a lot of us, I mean, you know, we're shooting where three-point lines wasn't even at. And, you know, you had guys averaging 30, 25, 30 points a game. Easy.
Unbelievable. So, so here it's 40 years later, and I was just back at a regular old high school reunion. There is a wistfulness to it, isn't there? There's a joy and a wistfulness and everything else. I mean, you have Ron Hurey has passed, and then other people's lives have gone different directions. I don't know. What do you wish you knew? What do you wish you knew then that you know now? Or I don't know. How do you feel about that part of it, coming back after all these years later? Your lives haven't taken the turns that they've taken. This time I'll start with you, Greg. How do you feel about it?
Oh, man, I'm excited. I haven't seen these guys, I know, at least 20, 25, 30 years. And to reunite and to come together and, you know, get to see the guys again, I mean, I'm overwhelmed with the joy of just seeing how everybody's done. I followed most of the guys' career when I was a freshman in college, just seeing how all of us were doing. And I looked up one year, I saw that Jim Barton led the entire nation, in free throw percentage. And Roderick Watson was racking it up down at Wake Forest. I mean, I'm like, I was so proud of these guys because I knew these guys, and they were playing Sylvester, Marvin, all of them, Ron Heary. I mean, all those guys. So I pretty much kept up with everybody's career during the time I was playing. But like I said, once I left and started playing international professionally, you know, I kind of wasn't keeping up because I had my own deal going then. So, but I'm excited about meeting all the guys.
Where'd you play overseas, Greg?
Ooh, I played in the Philippines. I played in Israel. I played in Brunei. I played pretty much a little bit everywhere. I stayed gone. I had an NBA deal with the New Jersey Nets. I even talked to the head coach at the time, was Willis Reed, Butch Beard. And they was trying to get me on their summer league roster, and I told them I had a guaranteed deal international. But they said it was going to try to work it out and get me on the team, but the roster was full. But they also told me keep in touch. But, you know, when you play international and you kind of making pretty decent money, you kind of forget about that part of that aspect because you're doing what you love to do. And, you know, I stayed gone quite a while. And I even came back out of retirement and played with Bobby Parks over in Brunei.
In Brunei. 40. David, your thoughts on this gathering tonight?
Yeah, absolutely excited. It's been way too long. And, you know, fortunately me being here in Memphis and coaching some, I run into some of the guys occasionally at gyms. Tim Hunt, one of our teammates, coached his nephew at ECS the last few years, so ran into him and then coached against Mark Griffin in AAU. So over the years, we kept saying, hey, we got to get this group back together. And we kept talking about it. And then when Ron passed, and Ron, what a great, great guy. I mean, I know he had some tough times, but great guy, fun to play with. He would dunk on you and then smile at you running down the court. But, yeah, we talked about it. And then finally, you know, unfortunately, Jim got diagnosed with cancer, and praise God, he is doing so much better. We got so many guys praying for him. But when things like that happen, we said, hey, the 40 year is coming up. We have got to get this group together. So Tim and Mark and I started making some phone calls and bringing it together. But, you know, we know their basketball career and all that, but I'm looking forward to hearing about their family and their lives and their careers and what's going on now. So I'm super, super excited.
Jim?
I would echo what both of them said, but you know, I would start with the base, which is there's a tremendous amount of mutual respect, and that base and the foundation of what we went through, coming together, playing together, and obviously, you know, winning a national title, and then just catching up.
Who'd you beat, by the way?
Kansas City.
Beat Kansas City here. It's funny hearing this though, like. When you compare it to what's happening now, where you can bounce from place to place and you can go off to these prep schools and whatever else, and people will say, well, is it too bad for the community because we don't get to watch this level of basketball, or is it too bad for University of Memphis because they don't have this automatic, you know, conveyor belt into their program? It also seems to me it's too bad for the kids, though, because you all have what you have because you were together for a length of time, right? If you spent 1 year together and then popped off to Miami to play for a prep school, and then that didn't work out, so you went to play for one in D.C., there'd be nothing to reunion about, right? Isn't that
right?
Exactly. I mean, the connectivity, and then the way it worked then is you had a state tournament,
right?
You had a regional tournament, and then you had the national tournament. So there was still a play-in process. So we were traveling together,
right?
Living together, hanging
out. How were you traveling? What were you traveling? What?
In a minivan, as I recall.
In 15-passenger van, yes. It was tight.
Exactly.
It was very tight.
Where would you stay? At some...
Just some hotel. Hotel.
I can still envision the hotel we stayed in Knoxville. We couldn't get in. It was late at night, and it's probably not even there now. But it would have been a sleep-in or something like that.
Nothing luxurious.
No. Anything else any of you want to say before we've successfully pulled off... I've never had three guests before simultaneously, so the teamwork, it endures after 40 years. I appreciate that. No one hogged the microphone. It was anything else, any you want to say before we let you go?
I appreciate you having us.
Well, thanks. By the way, you all stayed here. Like, I believe, Greg, are you in Memphis, Greg? Do you live in Memphis now?
Yes, I'm still here.
So let me address that last thing. Why are you all still here?
So I moved away. It by happen chance, moved back. I was away for 10 years. College, like Greg, had a similar career as him. Came back, played for the Memphis Rockers, actually.
Oh, did you really?
For a summer, played with the guys like Andre Turner, Vincent Askew. Had a great lot of fun here. But But moved away for 10 years, and work brought me here.
Right. Did you ever leave, David?
I just went away to college, and came back here for dental school at University of Tennessee. But my family and friends are here, and didn't want to leave them. I looked at some dental practices up in East Tennessee that were enticing, but loved the city of Memphis and didn't want to leave family and friends behind. So,
Greg, after all your travels, you wound up back in Memphis as well.
Yeah, because this is my hometown. This is where I was born and raised, and like I said, a lot of friends, and especially my AAU buddies, all of us played. And once my career ended, came back, didn't want to leave. You know, I lived out the country for many years, and it's just time for me to come back home, and this is where home is. And to get a phone call or get a text from David and all the guys wanting to meet up, that brought me joy, because I haven't heard nor seen any of these guys, and I know they haven't seen me as well. And it's going to be great to catch up with these guys and see what's going on, you know, how things are going. And, you know, I'm married. I have two boys. They're grown, though, and they're doing quite well for themselves as well. My two boys both play basketball. My youngest played a year at FAU, and my oldest son got recruited by Mississippi State as well.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so I'm excited about the reunion. Well, and most importantly, like I said, we won the national championship, and I think we all was excited about that. Because I'm going to tell you, we went through a tough schedule to win the national championship.
All right, I appreciate it. Thanks to all of you for being here, and have fun tonight. I'm sure you will.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks a lot. We got to take a break. Back in a moment. 92.9 FM, ESPN. I don't know what you're doing this weekend, but you might think about buying a tractor, because that would be fun. Buying a tractor would be fun, and if so, I would go to Mid-South Ag Equipment. Just head on down to Highway 302 in Byhalia and ask to see their Case IH tractors. And there's a smaller tractor, 140 horsepower or less. They're beautiful tractors, and they're the kind of tractor you use if you got a bigger piece of property, or you got a big garden, or you're bush hogging, or like that. And not if you're raising soy in Arkansas, but it's a tractor. It's a legit tractor. I saw them this past weekend, and they're beautiful, and they're the smaller Case IH tractor. Forget green. Go big red. Right now, in stock at Mid-South Ag Equipment, 0% financing at Mid-South Ag Equipment. So get yourself down to Highway 302 in Byhalia. A couple things struck me. I want to appreciate Greg Lockhart, Jim Barton, and David Kaiser all for joining us. And what really did strike me more than anything else was sort of what I said at the end. These guys are having a 40-year reunion of an AAU team because they got to know each other, because they were part of a basketball they were on the under 17s, but they were also on the under 15s or whatever. And then they played together. They stuck together. They traveled together. They weren't being shopped from one program to the next. They weren't jumping to prep school. And so I think it's great. NIL is fabulous for the opportunity to make some money. The ability to go to a prep school and play against high-level competition, be exposed to the rest of the world, that's I'm sure it has some advantages. I'm not sure it outweighs the advantages of playing and living in the place where you grew up against people who are your neighbors or cross-town people, you know, like about continuity, particularly for a young person, right? And so they're reunioning 40 years later, but, like, I don't think modern teams have anything to reunion about. Hell, the Memphis Tiger basketball team, college is thrown together on a year-end basis. Like, I don't know that they would have reunions. Like, is last year's team going to have some damn reunion? They were barely together. They weren't together when they weren't together. So I think there is something lost, not just for those of us who like watching them play in Memphis, which is selfish, or those of us who like to see them go to the University of Memphis. That was the other thing that was really interesting, is when Jim Barton said that first thing an out-of-town coach would say is Memphis recruiting them? Because if they were, it means they were legit. And if they were, it means if they're really good, we might not have much of a chance. And back then, I mean, Greg Lockhart said Memphis could sit back and pick who they wanted.
I think that was actually fascinating, because while Greg predates kind of the quote-unquote downfall of Larry,
yeah,
that does show you in the end, like, if you're going to go late, you better land everyone.
Right.
And, you know, to Greg's point, hey, Mississippi State just did a better job recruiting me.
Yeah, but on the other hand, let's be honest, the players that they... I mean,
for sure.
Greg,
I mean, it's not like a terrific player, but that era is not exactly an era of bad basketball.
But they got Sylvester Gray and Marvin Alexander off that team. So it's not like Larry didn't do his work on that team. Got terrific players. They just happened to sign with an agent and were ruled ineligible, and the rest is history. So that was tough. I like the point that you made off the air, which is that, okay, sure, the best players are going to prep schools out of town. But the other worrisome development is that, and they made the same point. Jim Barton went down the list of how many players were playing, and there's not as many.
The volume is down.
And I think you can ask, now I'm just spitballing, top of the head stuff. Are there not as many, in order to become a high-level high school basketball player, you need people who invest in you. You need coaches. You need programs. You need, like, even the people who grew up, like, Elliott Perry grew up dirt poor, right? But he talks all the time about the kid down the street, older kid down the street who took him under his wing.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, you need mentors, coaches, structure. And you wonder if the same breakdown in structure that might lead to some of the problems the city is having at large are also, we're seeing another manifestation of it because there's fewer kids following a productive path to being basketball players and more kids following unproductive paths. You know, you do wonder if that, again, this is just total top of the head spitballing, but it is an interesting idea.
Well, to me, it's like, okay, even if that's not the case, what is clear to me is the number of kids that are high-level college basketball players is clearly down. Why is that? I mean, it's largely the same, you know. It's Memphis is not exactly a city.
Not a difference. It's the same city.
Correct.
And so why? No, I think it's an interesting question. It also, you know, back when Penny said, when I leave, the whole thing's going to collapse, right? Whatever he said about that, however he phrased it. There, I know people, some rolled their eyes at it, because it really could be worse than two tournaments and six, you know, whatever, one tournament win and the last, is it going to be worse than that? You know, but I think he has a point in this regard. You saw what Memphis basketball was built on, right? What it was built on was two things. This vast, vast production of talented players coming out of Memphis, on the one hand. And then secondly, the assumption that the best would automatically go to Memphis.
Yeah.
So there were two things. Memphis was producing this incredible regular number of high-end players. And then the second part was, and by the way, if Memphis did, and it was all assumed that they'd go to Memphis. If Memphis didn't get them, it was an incredible upset. Both of those things have changed. Memphis is no longer recruiting, no producing nearly as many high-level players, and there's not an assumption of the high-level players that go to Memphis. 100%. And so you need, that was the bulwark. That was the foundation of Memphis basketball. Hell, this is what Tubby said once upon a time. We ran him out of town for saying it. But those things have changed. And so now Penny's celebrity, Penny's ability to raise money, Penny's ability to recruit different kinds of players from out of town is, in fact, that much more important given that the underpinnings of Memphis basketball have changed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you in that. I mean, I guess you could also make the argument, though, like, the highest of the high teams were not built on local players. Like Cal.
Those teams weren't. Those teams weren't. The highest of the high teams, Dana Kirk's teams were, and Gene Bartow's teams were. Cal's was not. They're very clear. Cal's was not. Cal's was built a different way. Anyway, I want to thank them all for coming in, and I want to thank them, and I hope they have a grand time tonight. We do have other matters to get to. including the NFL. Let's see, we had a game last night. Eagles 14, Pats 13. People evidently, I don't know if you caught any of it, people more impressed by Drake May. 6 of 11, 47 yards, ran for a touchdown. Evidently, should have had a long completion, except it was dropped. Were you more impressed by Drake May?
Yeah, so it's funny you mention it, because last night we had the new puppy, and it was my night to cook dinner. So I watched it after, and people were going nuts on Twitter.
This is amazing. You watched a preseason game
That's why we got NFL Network, baby.
After.
Yeah.
Right.
So I had seen the reaction, and I was thinking, like, okay, cool. Like, I'll be impressed.
You were not.
Yeah. I mean, to me, he was Captain Checkdown. Like, he's athletic. I knew all this. But, right.
Of course, you can be Captain Checkdown as a rookie, nervous to get the ball out, not take
for
big
sure.
chances. Doesn't mean you will forever be Captain Checkdown.
Here's my thing about Drake May. Drake May should want to not play this year. They suck.
Right, right.
They're horrible.
Right. You want to get some games in at the end.
They need to do, like, what game did Josh play, rookie? Was it?
He was thrown in earlier. That was the Nathan Peterman, Nathaniel Peterman.
To me, like, that's what you should want. Like, I don't know. Like,
ended up throwing him in, and he would just run wild.
Yes.
That's when he was vaulting over people.
He was just running over, right. Hurdling people, and throwing it deep. It was right. Awesome. He was literally playing a video game.
Yeah. Anyway, so that happened. I think in terms of interesting games this weekend, I mean, I'll be interested in what the Bills do. They need a bounce-back performance. But what they need to do is keep some folks healthy. So Russell Wilson's getting his first start in that
game. That's where I start with.
Yeah, that's easy, the most interesting thing. Because he did not play in game one because of the injury. And so he is getting the start tomorrow, against the Bills. And it feels like, they say all the time, Tomlin says he's got the pole position, or he's got the leader of the club, whatever it is, the way they phrase it. But it feels like there's a pretty thin margin for error there, and Justin Fields just looking over his shoulder. And so I think Russell Wilson has to do some work to hang on to that job.
The only thing that's going to help Russ is Fields' numbers last week looked better than he played. Like, he had a couple of fumbles, and I think if Russ, I really think if Russ just doesn't turn it over, he's going to at least start with the job. I just don't think he's going to hold it.
You do believe he will hold it?
Yes.
Do we have any
other? No, I think he's going to start.
Will not hold it. He will, yeah. he will hold
they're,
it through
they're
the
they're going to juggle quarterbacks.
Game one, he will start.
Yeah, they're going to juggle quarterbacks.
The other battles, I guess the one in Minnesota's over, right? That one seems to be over. Do we have a winner in Las Vegas?
Well, the only thing that was interesting with Minnesota, I don't know how much legs there were to it, but there was a report after the JJ injury that Minnesota was reaching out about Derek Carr.
Yeah, I saw that. Interesting.
But
for now.
For now, it's Sam Darnold.
For now, it's Sam Darnold. Do we have a winner in Las Vegas?
He's hoping to pick it this week.
He's hoping to pick it this week.
Yeah.
And Brissett?
I think Brissett's going to start.
Yeah, I think so too. There's not a whole lot of there's going to be a John Madden biopic.
Yeah,
Nicolas Cage playing John Madden. You in favor of that?
I had no idea that I needed this movie, but now I.
Oh,
do.
You're looking forward to
it? Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know what it reminds me? I don't think I needed the Air. Is that what the movie was called?
I completely agree.
I didn't think I needed a movie about Michael Jordan and Nike.
Vibes movie.
So great.
Great vibes movie.
So great.
Great soundtrack.
And one reason it was great was it was such a period piece, right? And this will be as well.
Yep.
I mean, John Madden, I think I'll enjoy
it. And Cage is just insane enough.
I can see him pulling it off. I think he could pull it off. Yeah, absolutely right. Speaking, by the way, of celebrity stuff, we talked earlier about the horrific Matthew Perry story. Were you at all familiar with this is definitely my era. Peter Marshall. If I say Peter Marshall, do you know who Peter Marshall is?
Is this Penny Marshall's relative?
He was the host of Hollywood Squares.
Ah, the original.
He was the original host, Paul Lynn and whatever, he was the host of Hollywood Squares. He died yesterday, I guess, or he died earlier this week. What was interesting about him, in addition to him sort of being a figure from my youth, and some of you out there of my vintage will remember him, his son, so Peter Marshall's name growing up, his last name was Lecoq. Now, Lecoq, that's not as good.
That is, right? Let me tell you what.
I think we can agree.
I bet he had thick skin.
Not as good. Lecoq, not as good. He became known as Peter Marshall, okay? And, but he had a son, and his son was named Pete Lecoq. Played Major League Baseball.
It translates as double cock.
Good for him.
Mm-hmm.
Played Major League Baseball, and in Bob Gibson's last appearance, hit a grand slam off of him. Hit a grand slam off
of Bob Gibson.
And then later, they met in a old-timers game, and Bob Gibson beamed him. I've been waiting a long time for this.
I mean, that was the other thing. I was thinking about this. So when Juan Soto hit his third home run, whatever, he hit three home runs, I guess, 2 days ago. Am I insane for thinking that should never happen?
Never happen. Never.
Yeah, after the second
right,
one, exactly either
right.
Don't pitch to him or hit
absolutely
him.
Absolutely right.
One or the other.
Never happen. Also in the NFL, we had the news yesterday that RG3 and Sam Ponder were being let go by ESPN.
No, Jeff. They were fired.
It is
that
interesting.
That was amazing to
the
me.
The word.
Right.
What's weird is the news report said fired.
Yes.
But then when you read about it, it wasn't like fired normally means did something wrong. You know, they were fired for cost-cutting reasons. It's really they were laid off. Like, I don't know why they said fired. Here's the thing. Were you astonished to know they each made seven figures?
No.
They freaking each made seven
figures. Yeah, that's why they were let go.
So Sam Ponder had a three-year, more than $3 million a year. She was on, of course, she was on Sunday NFL Countdown.
That's it.
And that is it. And that's one of the reasons she was let go.
Bingo.
Because all she does. Now, that's fine if you're Peyton Manning.
Yep.
It's fine if you're
Tom,
whatever. If you're someone who just does the NFL,
Aikman, yeah.
They'll pay you $3 million bucks to do
yep.
nothing but the NFL. If you're anyone else, you need to work a full year to make that kind of money. So what's interesting is they're thinking of either Lauren Rutledge or Mike Greenberg being Sunday NFL Countdown. And I just couldn't help.
I'm glad to see them get some more work.
And I just couldn't think, Greenberg, another thing? Like, I can't believe he does Get Up, and then he does the radio show that comes on,
yep.
You know, basically when ours comes on, and now he's going to do Sunday NFL Countdown.
Well, and he does NBA Countdown.
And yeah, like, he does Draft.
Yep.
He does, like, I and evidently he's the favorite. I don't hate Mike Greenberg. I'm a little jealous of Mike Greenberg that he...
This is a placeholder. Agreed?
I don't know. Is that
to
what
me,
it is?
To me, this feels like it's going to be a placeholder. So just do the honorable thing. For one season only, give us Boomer back.
Oh, you want Boomer back?
Just no for way. One
There's
more
no
year.
And then as for RG3, according to the reports, as recently as a year ago, he was considered a rising star.
From people that didn't listen to him.
So he almost got the number two college analyst job that went to Greg McElroy.
Yeah.
Right? Greg McElroy got that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was on Monday
night. I almost got a job at Google.
He was on Monday Night Countdown, and
got
Jason
replaced.
Kelsey replaced him for that. And so he's out. He's got a couple years left on that deal. He will get paid, so he didn't have to work immediately anywhere else. Good for you. I guess you're glad of that. But maybe Fox, whatever. He'll land somewhere. Don't you believe that?
Yeah, he'll land somewhere.
It is interesting. I don't... Like, I'd love to make seven figures. That would be great. But it is interesting. There's not that many places these people can go.
Well, if they want to make the same money.
If they want to make the same... Yeah. Like, if they... I mean, yeah, sure, they could get a job.
Yeah.
They could get a job somewhere. But otherwise...
They could replace a 2-4 host.
There's not a lot of places that they can go. Okay, a couple other things then before we do sign off here. One is, this happens every year. John Stacy is a big fan of Memphis football. He's a big fan of Memphis football. And every year, he gathers Memphis football tickets for veterans from the VA hospital, Memphis patients at the VA hospital in Memphis. It's been a great help for vets with PTSD and other maladies, help them adjust, overcome the obstacles that you can imagine they would overcome. They're doing it. They've done it. This is now their seventh year. So if you have tickets that you want to buy for the vets at the VA hospital, all you have to do is call this number, 901-678-1740. I'm going to repeat that. 901-678-1740. That's the Memphis Ticket Office. And tell them you want to buy a ticket for the vets at the VA hospital. Or you can just say, hey, I heard about John Stacy's Veterans Program. And you can buy tickets that way as well. Again, it's 901-678-1740. It is a terrific program. And it puts fannies in the seats at Memphis football games. And they're folks who serve this country. And John does a great job with that program. So give that a go. Second thing, we do have Fan Fest today, Jeffrey. Fan Fest, University of Memphis Fan Fest. I hear it's going to be 68 degrees and lovely. 5:45 to 7:30 over there at Averin Fogelman Field, over there at the South Campus. They'll have coaches, inflatables, all kinds of stuff. For those who want to celebrate the coming of another season. And, of course, as I said earlier, Brooks Monaghan is going to join Jason and John because he got to 300 wins last night. Memphis beats Alabama A&M 5-1. He gets the Gatorade shower. Truly one of the great coaches in this city to have built that women's basketball program. That women's soccer program into what he's, of course, I know it's a soccer program, into what he's built it. I was actually in his office recently. The guy has a deer head in his office.
Respect.
It's a women's
from
soccer.
From his own hands?
It's a women's, it's a women's soccer program.
Power move.
He's got a place in Mississippi where he likes to go hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and there's another one. With the guys who we talked to here, they all stayed in Memphis, and Brooks has a million chances to leave and go build a soccer program somewhere else, and he's done it in Memphis. So I'll be looking forward to hearing him on with Jason and John. That seems to be the end of our week of radio. Jeffrey, what is coming up next?
Here's what's coming up next.
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. It is, of course, Friday, so that means Anthony Sane will join their program. Blake Topmeyer joins us on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Cobb with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back on Monday. Stay cool, for now, work is done.